On this Monday, I have joining me in the studio Fire Chief Abner Hoag, and we just heard that little announcement about the wireless emergency alert that's coming up, and wanted to talk a bit this morning about that alert, what that is, what to expect, and also just what is happening in the preparedness here in town, and what kind of we want to say like alerts that you may hear, just as tests, and what you should do in an emergency. So thanks for tuning in, and thank you, Chief Hoag, for being here.
Good morning, Maria. Thanks for having me.
Let's start off. We heard that a little announcement, and coming up this Thursday, the 20th, there will be this what's called a WEA. Can you explain what that is and how that works?
There's a couple different things I'll talk about for you briefly here. I think you're right. It's important that we talk about this and let people know that there is a test of the emergency alert system and WEA on September 20th. As you said, that's Thursday at 10:18.
We were trying to figure out why.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything as to why 10:18 versus 10:20 or 10:30 or whatever, but we'll go with it. We know that it's at 10:18, and so we can expect it. So this test is going to go out over the emergency alert system and the wireless emergency alert system. The two terms that you hear talked about there. Emergency alert system is the one that everybody is pretty familiar with. It comes out over the radio and your TV, and there's the tone, and then you see the regular weekly tests or or monthly tests. And so you get the tone that interrupts your radio programming, your TV programming, and then the text of whatever that that test message or that emergency might be. So everyone's pretty familiar with that. You start to get a little more confusion with some of these new systems that are out there. Wireless emergency alerts is a newer system. It's on your cellular phones, and it's a federal program that's mandated that wireless carriers implement this baked into your phone. So you do have the ability to go and turn it off, but by default it's turned on. And those have to be activated at the federal level.
And one would think you'd want it on.
I would think I would want it on.
If there's an emergency. And how does this work? Is it where you are physically located?
It's where you're physically located. So basically, your cell phone to have a signal has to be connected to a cellular tower. And the way that the WEAs are activated is based on a geographic location, and they activate all of the towers within the affected area. So if your phone has a signal in the area that's affected, you're going to get that message without installing any additional software, without signing up for anything. You will get those types of messages. The one potential drawback is there's no local input to that typically, and so you're going to get a canned big picture message that may not have specifics for you on your community. But it's at least going to cue you that you need to take some sort of action, and you can determine what that is.
This is a text message on your phone?
It pops up like a notification from your carrier would. So if you've ever ended up in a roaming area, say you're flying through Canada and you forgot to turn your phone off or onto airplane mode, sometimes you'll get a little pop-up notification. It's kind of like that. It'll pop up over top of everything else.
In this case, it will say this is a test?
In this case, I don't have the exact wording in front of me, but it's going to say something along the lines of this is a presidential test message. That's what they're testing in this case, is a message from the president activating this system.
To see if it works.
To make sure that it works, yeah.
And then they're asked.
They've been very hesitant to test this system a lot because they don't want to activate everybody's phone and override it like that. It's important for them to test the system and make sure it's working the way that they expect it to.
We will hear both over the radio airwaves as well as you mentioned, television, as well as going to wireless. And then they
Correct.
Want people to report if they did not receive it, if they did receive it.
The state of Alaska is asking for people to report how the test goes, and you can find that information on their website at ready.alaska.gov. So the other thing that I'll point out for you, we have an additional system we use here locally in Ketchikan, our Ketchikan, Alaska Community Notification System. You may also hear it referred to as NICSL. It's a text message-based system that people do sign up for to receive emergency alerts and advisories from the city, from the borough, from the school district, from the Alaska State Trooper post here in Ketchikan. And you can sign up for that by texting our zip code 99901 to the phone number 888-777. we will not be testing that system as part of this. So you should not expect to receive a text message from that system on Thursday. And also, we will not be testing our local sirens.
Okay. And let's go back to Nixle just a little bit. If people didn't catch that, you go to the city website. Where do you go to find?
You can go on the city website and or the borough website, either one. On the city website, in the top right menu, you go to I Want To, and then there's a link that says Receive Emergency Alerts. You can sign up there, or you can simply take your cell phone out. You open up a new text message to the phone number 888-777 and text your zip code. And you can text not only our zip code, but if you wanted, you had family lived in Virginia, you could text their zip code, and if their community is using it, you would then receive alerts for their community as well.
So it's a national system.
It's a commercial system, and they have customers nationally. Not everyone nationally is using it, but if they are and you text that zip code, it will you'll be able to sign up for alerts there.
Okay. Also, let's speak about – oh, and I should point out, with Nixle, I myself actually am one of those primitive people without a cell phone,
okay.
But you can get emails.
You can sign up for phone messages. So as long as you have access to the internet to go on and sign up for it on our webpage or the borough website or whatever, you'll be able to set that up that you could get emails or phone calls.
Let's talk about the emergency alerts here. We have several – what do you call them? I don't know. Speakers by the lakes, that. Can you explain where those are located and how what people should do, I guess, if they hear those alerts?
Sure. We have a series of sirens in our community. They're loudspeakers. You can do voice over them as well as siren. And that system is, you often hear people call it a tsunami siren. Yes, we use it for that if we ever have that happen. But we can use it for any kind of hazard, any kind of emergency to alert the community of what's going. The funding for our sirens that we have primarily came through NOAA as a tsunami warning system. We had two big reasons we installed it. That was one. The other one is our dam systems that have areas below them that potentially could get flooded in the case of a dam breach. And so the sirens, the first two, were installed to cover actually the dam breach areas. And so you have one at the corner of Park and Fair, and then you have another one at Bailey Power Plant. Those were the first two that were installed. And both of those sirens cover the areas that potentially would have flooding if there were a dam breach, either at Ketchikan Lakes or,
Is that Carlana?
Carlana Lake, yes. That's what the first two were installed for, and we've added to that over the time. There's one at the fire station downtown that covers the downtown area and the cruise ship berths. We're getting ready to install one in Saxman that will cover the Saxman community, the waterfront area there, and the population center there. And then we have installed one just up above Ports and Harbors near the Public Works building to cover – gives a little better coverage from the hospital down to the plaza.
I've heard some people express concerns about Ward Lake because there's that dam up there that there's – you know, it's not as active or being followed up on.
Mm-hmm.
Has there ever been discussion about putting one in that zone?
I haven't had that discussion personally. There is someone operating that dam and maintaining it, and so it is being taken care of. They have a plan, and I've reviewed their plan for if they have any problems up there. And the problem with trying to put a siren for somewhere like there is that the population that it would cover probably doesn't make it cost effective. There's a very small population, if any, that lives within that inundation zone. And then what you really have is the transient people that would be in the campground down there. That's probably our biggest danger in that area is that campground.
Okay, makes sense. should point out, made a request out to Prince of Wales Island to chat with some folks out there to find out about the emergency setups there. Joining us, we have Brian Templin, who is a city planner. Good morning.
Good morning, Maria.
Thank you very much. And can you give us, I guess, a little bit about what Prince of Wales Island is doing for emergency alerts and management.
Sure. So just like a lot of communities, our emergency alert system has kind of grown over the years, starting, you know, the first real test of our alert system was back in 2012. And like most, like a lot of communities in the Southeast, we were kind of limited to sending emergency responders door to door and getting on the VHF radio. And we've kind of built our system up since then, starting with some social media and making sure that information access was on our website and stuff. But like Abner was talking about there for Ketchikan, in the last few years, we've also put in place a notification system. We use a system called OmniAlert, which is very similar to Nixle. And we have the system set up so that we provide some general alerts to all of Prince of Wales. But as you know, there's a number of communities, and the communities all make different decisions during an emergency, and they have different instructions, different things that they would like their residents to do. So we've set our system up so that we kind of send the high-level alerts to all subscribers on Prince of Wales, but then allow the communities to send more specific information to their residents. So a good example is the January earthquake here in over in the Kodiak that triggered a tsunami alarm. The first time that we saw the wireless emergency alert system used, at least here in Southeast, we were sending out, we sent out information at the beginning of the event and at the end of the event to all of the subscribers on Prince of Wales. And then we're trying to update local residents every 20 minutes or so on where to evacuate to. We also have a couple of sirens here in Craig. Kluwak has sirens installed, and a couple of other communities are working to install sirens on Prince of Wales. But a lot of it is still pretty patchwork on Prince of Wales, just because each community is kind of approaching this emergency alert a little bit differently.
You have a island-wide, what do you say, effort or a community or committee that works on this, correct?
We do. The Southern Southeast Local Emergency Planning Committee, it pretty much covers Prince of Wales Island, and the purpose of that group is to kind of be a go-between between state and some federal agencies, and also a group of local first responders and business representatives and local governments who are concentrating on not just alerts, but in general emergency preparedness island-wide.
How have things been going with when an event happens, as you mentioned, the one of you know, people heeding the warnings or getting that information, and what kind of responses do you get from people?
Going back to January is a great example. So we had all of our evacuation points were completely plugged with people and cars. There were some exceptions, obviously, as in most communities, but the majority of the community, either directly through the wireless emergency alert or through one of the other notifications, found out what was going on and responded. So I think we've had a pretty good response. It's something that I don't think we're where we need to be yet, so we're continuing to work on. But I think the response, the folks' awareness of the system is certainly getting better and better.
Are there things on Prince of Wales, looking at Prince of Wales Island as a whole, you mentioned there are some holes that maybe need to be filled. What are some things that, the group is striving toward adding or changing?
Really, it's a matter of trying to figure out what's working for all of the communities to start with. So we have communities here, not just people that choose not to have cell phones, but entire communities that are off of the cellular grid. And so we have entire communities that, for example, likely will not receive the wireless emergency alerts, whether it's the test this week or regular alerts, because they don't get any cellular service in their community. We've got Prince of Wales Community Advisory Council has been working with cell phone providers to try and improve some of that. But in the meantime, we're really trying to educate the communities and make sure that we have at least someone in the community that is able to get notified through our OmniAlert system or through some other notification system. And then I guess one of the things that I would say, I'll make a plug since we're in the middle of National Preparedness Month here, is that we've really been trying to educate all of the communities and more importantly, the residents of the communities on their responsibility as individuals and families to be prepared and where they can go find more information.
Okay, great. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
Just if folks on Prince of Wales are interested in signing up for the OmniAlert system and they haven't yet, they can go to the city website at www.craigak.com. And if they click on the Items of Interest tab, there's a document there that has the website where they can go sign up for OmniAlerts.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Brian.
Thanks, Maria.
Brian Templin, he is with a Craig City planner. And I am also would like to open up the phone lines if there are folks out there that maybe have questions about the emergency alerts or other thing, maybe even preparedness. You can give us a call at 225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723. We are talking about the alert that will be coming up this Thursday. Just to give you a heads up is a big part of it because you don't want anybody to be caught off guard. But also it's a great opportunity just to talk about being prepared. So let's say it were real. Let's say there were a real emergency, Abner Hoag. What should people do? Obviously, you need to listen to the alert and find out what it's about. But what do we have in this community? How do we have things set up? Should there be a major emergency?
Well, first of all, let me go back to something that Brian talked about, and that's that we want our residents and community members to have a plan for themselves individually before a disaster happens. At the time that something's going bad is not the time to make your plan. So we encourage people to know what the hazards are in our community and to prepare for those in advance. Know where your nearest shelter is in case of a tsunami and you live at sea level. You know, there's a possibility because we are waterfront community that the tsunami is a possibility. It's a somewhat distant possibility, but it is there. And so we don't want you trying to decide where you're going to go at the time that those sirens go off and things are going bad. We have shelters set up throughout the community. You can find that information also through our preparedness page that's on the fire department web portion of the City of Ketchikan website. If you navigate to that, you'll find a preparedness page, and that has all the information on where the shelters are at. It talks some more about the sirens and the different sounds that you might hear from those sirens, and then you can start to plan what you will do in the case of a disaster. So what you're going to do, there's such a broad range of disasters that could happen that your actions may vary from case to case. You know, if you have an earthquake, the first step is to drop cover and hold on. You want to get under something solid and you want to stay there until the ground stops shaking. Once that's done, and that's probably one of our bigger hazards, we don't have a fault line super close to us, but there is some offshore and potential for that. So, and if you travel anywhere else in the state of Alaska, it's definitely a hazard. So we still want people to know about it. So drop cover and hold on. If you happen to be at sea level and it's a significant earthquake that knocks you to the ground on its own or lasts longer than 20 seconds, you should think about potential tsunami. And then we recommend that you get to high ground until you can verify that it's not a hazard following a strong earthquake.
And again, you don't really know and exactly what hazard might happen, but being prepared is important. And there is a lot of excellent information about putting together a, say, 7-day kit and things like that. That's all available on the city website.
We don't have all the details on there. We do, I believe, have a link on there to the state website, which does have all of those materials.
Which is ready.alaska.gov. And it's very helpful, may I say.
It's a very good website.
And what I started to do, because it's daunting when you look at all the lists, but mm-hmm. I started the 5-gallon bucket thing that they say, you know, all this stuff can be put in there. And I was amazed at really how much I already had in my house.
Right.
But it was just putting it in a place. So if you need it, it's there. And if you need to, you can grab it and go. And that was more, I would call, helpful supplies, things like can openers, plastic bags, rubber gloves, earplugs,
right,
work gloves, medical
stuff. A wrench to be able to turn off gas if you happen to have propane tank at your house, or secure the water, those sorts of things. Big earthquakes, people don't think about that a lot, but the utilities often get damaged during an earthquake. And so you want to be able to secure those so that it's not causing additional damage after the quake is done.
And that's also a good and important thing in preparing is look through your house. Do you know how to turn off the water
or turn off the gas?
Because most of us don't
deal with that every day.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So things like that is... little things kind of like that can make a big difference in an emergency. Also having a plan for your pets, having a plan for your whole family of if we're not in the same place, where are we going to meet? How are we going to communicate?
And I think you make a good point there. Sharing that plan with the rest of your family and any emergency contacts that you have is a really good idea as well. Because our communication systems in the U.S. are fairly fragile, especially our cell phone systems, which everyone relies on. Those systems get overloaded very quickly in a disaster, and that's been seen throughout the U.S. as the hurricanes happen or tornadoes or whatever. When large portions of the population are affected, the first thing they want to do is they want to get on social media and they want to call their friends and family. And so those systems just can't take everyone being on there at once. One piece of advice, text messages typically tend to still work even when you can't get on and make a voice phone call. If you can send out a text message, that tower will receive it and it'll store it, and it may not send it immediately, but eventually when it has the bandwidth available, it will send those out.
Isn't it also recommended to have someone in another state, in another area, who is a contact in case communications are kind of down where you are, and you maybe can get to police department or something where they can get a message out, but it may be difficult for the family.
It is a good idea to have a point of contact that you can reach out to once you get communication when your area is affected, and then your friends and family know that they can contact them, and then that way you're shifting that load on the communication systems to another area instead of yours.
Okay. And this, there's Emergency Preparedness Month. We're not really in that now, right? It's interesting that this test is happening.
September is National Preparedness Month.
So good.
We are.
Then we're timely.
We are in National Preparedness Month.
I haven't heard a lot of preparedness announcements lately, so hopefully we're getting the word out there. Are there other things that come to mind that you think it's important for people to think about as they're putting together their plan, as they're putting together their emergency kits? Anything in particular that maybe sometimes people forget or aren't as good about adding? And I know water is an important thing. We get a lot of water here, but it has been dry. And a lot of times people don't necessarily think about stocking up on food and water and certain things.
You want to be able to be self-reliant for 3 to 7 days after a major disaster, because it's going to take that long for any community to get their systems back in place. And the less people that we have to try to help out immediately, the better we can deploy those resources to help injured people or fight fires or whatever the immediate needs are versus getting people water or food.
And I think Alaskans on the whole are a pretty self-reliant group of people. Mm-hmm. But you may have neighbors who might need help. It may be if there is a huge emergency, you're not going to have the emergency responders coming to you. So it's like helping each other as well.
Right. Be ready to take care of yourself and your neighbors for the first 3 to 7 days, because your emergency response forces will be, if we had an earthquake that hit Ketchikan and we had major damage from it, it's going to be 3 to 7 days before you can get out to everyone. And so you need those people, you need those contacts in your neighborhood, even outside your neighborhood. Have a plan for where you're going to go if your immediate neighborhood is affected. We have shelters throughout the community. Pretty much all of the schools are designated as shelters. Many of the churches are also, we have agreements in place with them to use them as shelters.
A few places are, what would you say, like meeting points, and then they bus you from there. The library comes to mind, as I believe it just is supposed to be a gathering point, as opposed to a, because they don't have necessarily
Right. The library is not going to have a kitchen and sleeping facilities and things like that. The evacuation route signs that we have all lead to high ground. Those evacuation route signs are primarily for the case of a tsunami, but those shelters do dual purpose for us. We can use them for any type of disaster, but they're located where they are so that they can serve that dual function of, you know, low level flooding or tsunami type incident to get people to high ground.
Okay, we just have a few minutes left. If there are any questions out there, you can give us a call at 225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723. What was my other thought? I'm sorry.
I had something else I wanted to talk about briefly. Again, Brian talked about the LEPC over on Prince of Wales. We also have an LEPC here in Ketchikan, and that group is very active. They meet on the second
Wednesday
of each month. May to September, we meet over at the Whitecliff Building, and October through April, we meet down at Fire Station 1 downtown. That group they're involved in all hazards of planning. They do help us with our emergency operations plan, revising that and making sure that we have plans in place to deal with disasters. But another thing that they do is they help to put together exercises, and that's the one that I wanted to mention briefly, is that they're currently planning what's called a point of distribution exercise for October 20th, and it's going to take place at the high school. Point of dispensing is for delivering medications in the case of a health emergency primarily. And in this case, what we're going to do is we're actually going to deliver free flu vaccines in order to test our processes for delivering any kind of medication. So we're going to have about 500 doses of flu vaccine available. You don't have to sign up to come participate in that. We're going to be advertising, hopefully this week, we'll start the advertising campaign to get people to show up. It'll be first come, first serve. We will also be looking for volunteers to help operate that point of dispensing. And it takes about 40 people or so to operate that dispensing station. And only a few of them need to be medically trained. We need people to help be runners, to help direct people where to go, to help
collect paperwork and register
people and all those little sorts of tasks that don't take any special skill that we can train you to do at the time of the event. And so we're going to also be asking for volunteers. And the volunteers, I know we're going to be asking to show up at 9 a.m. so that we can do that training. And then the exercise, I believe the kickoff time for people to come through and get flu vaccine is 10 a.m.
How long will it go? Is it scheduled to be
a fairly
long? It's
scheduled to be done by 2 o'clock.
Okay. Okay. So, or if you
earlier,
run out of
if
vaccines.
We run out of vaccines, if we have a huge turnout and we run out, we'll end it when we're out of vaccine.
And what do you hope to learn from that?
We public health has written a point. They're responsible for dispensing medications, and they have a plan for point of dispensing. And what we're doing is testing that plan to make sure that it's adequate, that we have the right positions filled, that we can get the medication there, that we can move people through in an orderly fashion and dispense that.
And you'll learn.
And we'll learn. And we've done a tabletop already, and the plan is good. And so we're moving on to the actually testing it phase.
Has this been done before? I know other exercises have, but
we believe it's been done, but any of us that are involved currently, we're not here when it happened, and so it's time to do it again.
Okay. All right. That sounds interesting. Again, that's in October.
October 20th.
Okay. We're kind of running short on time. Anything else that you wanted to add?
No, not that I can think of. Thanks for having me in this morning. Make sure that you are aware of our hazards in our community and have a plan.
Okay, and again, coming up with that test, we're going to have a little another announcement here with regards to that to remind you. Again, it's coming up on the 20th, so be ready. And if you hear that announcement, don't be alarmed. It's only a test. Should also add, if some actual emergency is happening, then it would be canceled. So be aware of that as well.